Welcome to a very special Future Focus Now. My guests are 3Live Crew, host of 102 Jams Morning Show. While attending Winston-Salem State University, BDOT started at 102 Jam in the fall of 2004. He's always made it his mission to make everyone in the building at 102 Jam smile. Gaining more confidence, BDOT eventually took his talents to the stage as a stand-up comedian. By the time he graduated from Winston-Salem State University in 2006, he was a fixture on the Wild Out Wake Up Show as the funny man of the mornings. He specialized in his world-famous prank phone calls, which eventually led him to be a member of 3Live Crew, Drankins. Drankins started out on the campus of North Carolina A&T State University, hosting campus and community shows. At that time, being on the radio seemed just like an idea. His career on the radio launched during his debut during several comedy contests on 102 Jams. After winning consecutive years of the comedy contest, Drankins became a regular on the Wild Out Wake Up Morning Show at 102 Jams. His daily crazy shenanigans became his signature, something everyone in the building and listeners wanted to hear and experience. Roxy graduated from WSSU in 2011. Listening to 102 Jams every morning before school, Roxy knew this was her dream job. It was my love for radio and admiration for previous morning show talent like Africa that prompted me to seek an internship with the hottest station in the triad. Roxy joined the 102 Jams family during her time at Winston-Salem State University, starting off as an intern and then moving up in the ranks. Now she is one of the three personalities that make up the best morning crew in the world. Dreams really do come true. I live mine every day. Roxy loves making a difference by mentoring young girls. She's a very strong believer in giving back and remembering where you come from. Please welcome to Future Focus Now, 3Live Crew in the house. We're glad to have you guys. Thanks for joining me, being a part of the show tonight. I am so glad to have you on the show. How are you, by the way? How's everybody? BDOT, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chancellor. I got a new air fryer and I can't wait to use it.
I can't wait to see you use it. You
might. Hey, I'm putting pictures up at, by 10 o'clock. I'm gonna have pictures up on my steak with parsley on it.
Chancellor, I think you ought to cook something right now while our viewers can see you.
I could.
No, don't stop. Don't
do it. Robinson, please. No, don't.
Say please don't entertain that.
Don't.
Look, how are you guys doing, man? We're in a pandemic. Things are not usual. Just how are you doing health-wise? How's your health? How's your family? How's everything?
I would just like to say first, honestly, thank you for having us on Future Focus Now, Chancellor, because even though Roxy Drankins and I talk to each other 5 days out of 7 a week, we rarely get to see each other. You know what I mean? Like, and so just being able to actually see them is always dope for me because, again, due to the pandemic, you know, we've been working from home. I've been at the station, but Drankins and Roxy have been working remotely. And that has its own difficulties because, you know, we use a lot of non-verbal communication in the studio and not being able to do that. A lot of things just come off the cuff and we're just in the room. Drankins could be eating something ridiculous and Roxy could be recording it. And next thing you know, we got an entertaining break. So, you know, like not being able to see them has been like the most difficult part. But so again, like I appreciate you for having us on here so I can see the homies.
All right. I mean, thanks for being on here. Everybody else okay? Roxy, how are you? Drankins, how are you doing, man? How's the family? How's everybody?
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Chancellor Robinson, real good.
Fantastic. Great over here also. Staying healthy, staying out the way.
Hey, I love to hear that. I love and continue to do that. We got a long ways to go. We're not through this thing yet. And I want you guys to continue to promote staying well, staying healthy, doing all the things we need to do to try to beat this thing. We're not there yet. And we're getting a lot of COVID fatigue. A lot of the students on campus, faculty, staff, people in the community also. So as much as you guys can continue to promote being healthy, I would appreciate that. You've been doing a great job with that. Let's continue. This is a great group. I mean, you guys are an important group. People know you. You have a brand. Three Live Crew is a brand that you have. How long have you been together? And how did you come together? How did this crew come together?
We've been together 6 years. 6 years this past August. We came together about 6-7 years ago. It was I was on the morning show with Kyle Santillan, another WSSU ran, and he's now out in Chicago doing real well. But at that point, when they were trying to go in a different direction or whatever it is, whatever decisions they were making, they had me fill in for the spot until they figured out which direction they were going to go in. I had known Drankins for a while. We had done comedy together, traveled the country doing comedy. So I knew that if I had a shot, then I knew I wanted him as my co-pilot. And we went through a couple different female co-hosts to try to audition to see, you know, who we had good chemistry with. And none of them really brought it like Rock. You know what I mean? Like, it was just great energy when we kicked it off. And, you know, we've been together 6 years strong, man. Like, we brought the ratings back up to numbers that the station had never seen before. We reached demographics that the station was normally not used to reaching. We've been strong as from 12 up to 54. And it's really a testament just to our cohesiveness and our friendship and just the way we people just receive that friendship and receive that energy Monday through Friday from 6 to 10.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show. I mean, I think you guys are doing something special. I think you're doing something unique. And what we want to do on Future Focus is really expose, you know, a different audience to you. I mean, the folks that listen to my show and look at my show, and not only in North Carolina, but around the country, we get a chance to see, I think, a new show, something they've never seen before. That's why I wanted to have you guys on. I love your work. I love your approach to it. I think you're great representatives of HBCUs. You tell the HBCU story strong and hard, and I really appreciate that. I'm interested in your show and how you guys come together and how you collaborate to pull off a show. Now, you guys do five days a week?
Five
days from 6 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot. So tell me how the show comes together, and how do you make it happen?
It doesn't seem like a lot. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was about to say, probably very different than a lot of other shows. Generally, a show would take like a lot of planning, a lot of sitting down and talking, bouncing ideas off of each other. And our process is just so different because we've got great chemistry. We're friends. We love each other. And so we just come up with so much content and material just talking to each other and laughing with each other. And that's when we come up with our greatest bits and our greatest ideas. Like one of our most popular bits, Thoughtspiration, came from us sitting in a production room one Thursday morning, and Drank is going through Facebook and getting agitated with chicks posting quotes and memes on Facebook. And Thoughtspiration was created out of us joking and laughing at Drankin's agitation. And so it's just very natural with us, and it flows so easily. And that's not the case for a lot of other shows, and luckily it is for us.
Yeah, and listening to that, it takes a certain amount of trust to get in that space. Like, do you guys know what you're going to do tomorrow? I mean, do you have an idea.
I mean, you know, we have certain staples on days, like TV Tuesday is tomorrow. So folks will call up and let us know what they're watching on TV. But this started, like Roxy said, very organically. We are all stuck in the house watching stuff on Netflix. So one Tuesday, we were like, yo, what y'all watching on TV? And from there, it's sort of stuck.
Okay. Yeah. So, but it is a amount of trust. You trust each other. You like each other. You know each other. And so you know when you get on the air that it's going to work, that something is going to happen. Some magic is going to happen. I like that. I like that approach. Here's a question for you. I'm reading a science fiction novel. I'm not a big science fiction guy, but I read a little bit of science fiction. So let me ask you this question. Okay. Let's say some force from outer space traveled and came to Earth and landed on Earth. And the first thing they got was a demo tape of your show. And they started listening to the show. They listened to the show several times. What do they know about humans on Earth?
They're gonna know Beyonce is the queen. They're gonna hate Cardi B. They're gonna hate Lil Wayne.
They're gonna know where to get something to eat for a good price.
They're gonna know that the air fryer is the best invention since the microwave in 67.
Yes.
Gotcha. They'll know what shows to watch. They'll know what shows and what movies to watch.
Right.
They'll know how to navigate the hood.
Yeah.
So they little alien behind won't end up in a pot of greens.
They're gonna get some current events.
Right. Yeah.
They'll be informed. Yes. They'll definitely know what's going on.
Yeah, they're gonna know about the Dallas Cowboys and the Panthers. They're definitely gonna know about those.
Yeah.
And of course they're gonna know that HBCUs run the world.
Mm-hmm. So they're gonna leave with
this is in one day.
This is one day.
That's just one day.
This is one day.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great introduction to your show. I mean, how do you, and I brought that up because when people talk about your show, how do you describe it to them? I mean, what is your show about? And then give me some indication, some clues to about the music itself. It is labeled a hip hop station. What does that mean?
We play urban music. We play urban music for the 18 to 24 demographic. That's pretty much what it means. In the 90s, hip hop was in the 18 to 24. You got Biggie, Pac, Hot Boys, No Limit, Lauryn Hill, Lil' Kim, Foxy Brown, that type of vibe. Fast forward to 2020, you got Drake, Migos, Cardi B,
Megan Thee Stallion.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's pretty much what it means. That 18 to 24 demographic is who we cater to, urban.
Now, has that expanded at all? Is it still 18 to 24?
They're different.
When you say the 18 to 24 demographic.
Well, our jams solely, they only care about 18 to 24. If you're 25 and you listen, we appreciate you. If you're 17 and you listen, we appreciate you. But our content is geared towards 18 to 24. Now, we have an issue with that sometimes, Chancellor, because although we look like it, none of us are 18 to 24. So, we're married with children and kids in high school. So, we still try to keep the music is there for that 18 to 24. And we try to come in between breaks and fill the gap for that 25 to 35, but we do it in a way where it's entertaining. The 18 to 24 can still relate.
We even bridge the gap from the old head to the young head, because there are a lot of 50, 40 something, 50 year old people who grew up on hip hop, they want to understand the young kids now and the music they listen to. So I feel like we do a great job in bridging that gap too, from 20-year-olds to the 30-year-olds to the 40-year-olds to the 50-year-olds.
Yeah.
So,
but in terms of looking at that gap, bridging that gap, how do you think the old heads and the old schools, certainly older than, not older than I am, because I actually was, kind of part of the beginning of kind of the hip hop generation. How do they view hip hop today, and how has it changed?
They view hip hop the way my parents view hip hop when I was in high school. I can't understand what they're talking about. What is this Bone Thugs and Harmony? You don't even know what they're saying. Like, what is this? What is Genuine riding a pony? What are y'all listening to? It's the same type stuff that we get today. Like, what is NLE Choppa and Kodak? Like, what are they talking about? That is the same type thing, man.
Yeah. And you guys are comfortable in that space? And how do you stay comfortable in that space? Because you, like you say, I mean, you're not, you know, you're not 18 to 24. How do you stay fresh and how do you stay current?
I know speaking for myself, like I've always been a hip hop baby. Like I didn't come into the world like listening to, you know, the Four Tops and all that and just doing it. No, like,
you be
know,
careful, Dre.
I'm just saying, you know, the Motown days and all that and whatnot, you know, I'm a hip hop baby. So I love hip hop. I love the evolution of hip hop. You know, hip hop is pretty much the streets, you know, and hip hop is always going to talk about what's going on in the street right now. You know what I'm saying? And if, you know, you hear, you have a lot of people who always talk about, you know, hip hop is dead and they always reference the 90s as real hip hop and all that and all that. No, I just feel like they're just, you know, they're just hip hop babies who didn't, you know, they didn't want to evolve, you know, with hip hop, you know, so that's, I mean,
yeah,
that's how I look at it. That's how I stay on top of it right now, you know.
But I'm interested. I mean, I also want you and Roxy to answer this as well. I mean, how do you stay current with what's happening? Because, I mean, I get this sense that there's a lot going on in hip hop. I mean, there, you know, even the little bit that I know about hip hop is only, say, maybe 5 or 10%. And it just seems like every day there are new artists and there are new things that are happening, there are new fads. How do you guys stay there? I mean, what do you look at? What do you read?
Social media.
What do you listen to?
Yeah, like since its conception, hip hop has controlled. What'd you say, Rob?
What Drake say?
Social media.
Said social media.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But like since its conception, hip hop has controlled that demographic. Like it controls everything. Like football, clothing, like it controls everything hip hop does. Like athletes want to be rappers and rappers want to be athletes. They always say that. And from that perspective, Drake gave his perspective. From my perspective, I'm not in radio because I love music. I wasn't a music major or any of that. I'm in radio because I'm entertaining between songs. And honestly, that's the strength of this show. The strength of this show is the entertainment between the songs. Drankins and I really with social media. We give Roxy a hard time all the time because she could care less about social media. But with us being so in the know on social media and stuff like that, also combined with being so heavy at our alma maters. Drankins is at A&T all the time doing stuff. I'm at Winston-Salem State all the time. So we're constantly in those environments. For 10 years, Drankins and I were part of a comedy crew on a freestyle funny comedy show where we would go all to college campuses all over the country doing comedy. So we always had to keep that type of energy. And I think that's really advantageous for as far as what we do on the air. We don't necessarily have to like the music, but because we're in the demo, in the idea that we're urban, we're Black, we know the players, we can talk about it and people can listen to it and appreciate that.
Okay. So
Stanford, I'm just a young old auntie. I don't know how. I don't know how. People just like my young old auntiness. It just works for me.
It just works.
Yeah.
It works. I mean, you know, when I think about a morning show, right? And so when I get up in the morning and I turn on to a morning show, I'm looking for stuff. Like I'm looking sometimes to be entertained, but I'm also looking for information. I want to know what's happening in the world. And you guys are sick. You guys from 6 until 10. So you have 4 hours and you talk about your demographic, 18 to 24. What are they looking for in the morning when they get up? And I think that maybe speaks to how you design and how you think about your show.
I think more than anything, they're looking for a good time and they're looking to be entertained on their way to work. Obviously, you know, the politics, gossip, big news stories like that, people want to hear about those things, but with information being so readily available the way it is, they want to hear our perspective, not necessarily what's going on, if that makes sense. They want to hear what we think about Donald Trump tweeting he won the election, and not necessarily that Donald Trump tweeted he won the election. Right. They want to hear our spin and our take on what's going on, because that's something that we can give them in only the three live crew way that we can.
Yeah,
I agree 100%. And I think that's why that it's so engaging, because with the three of us, when you turn it on, you never know which side of the coin everybody's going to be on. Like, yeah. There are times when Drankins and I are on the same page and Roxy's on the island. Times when Drankins is on the island. And this time where they're making fun of me and I'm on the island. And the listener can identify with one of those players.
Yeah.
And it's so many times that things happen and we'll see on social media, I cannot wait to hear what the three live got to say about this tomorrow. And so I agree 100% with Roxy. And I think that's a testament to our transparency and our vulnerability on the air. The audience, they know us. They know our families. They know our backgrounds. They know if Roxy's having a bad day, I'll jump right up. Yo, Roxy having a bad day today. And Roxy will jump out and say why she's having a bad day. And then people call up and defend Roxy. Leave Roxy alone. People have bad days all the time. And it's that type of energy. Roxy said one time before that it's just the three of us talking. And you all are just happen to be eavesdropping on our conversation. And it doesn't get any realer than that. That's the reality.
Yeah.
The same conversations we have on air are the exact same conversations we would have in the club, just minus the curse words.
Look, I like that approach. And I tell folks when they come on the show, we're just having a conversation. It really is about talking. And then, right, Roxy, I think you're right. Then other people just happen, whoever's tuning in, gets privy to our conversation. You know, as we're thinking about these kinds of issues. So it sounds like on your show, your audience is sometimes looks to you for confirmation. They want to know what you think about that idea. And they call in. And when they call in, what do they call in about? Why do they call you? When they get calls, what do they want to know?
You would be amazed at the You would be amazed at the advice people would want from me as a stranger. Like, I mean, Chancellor, no Chancellor, I'm talking about these are life decisions they will call up. And they're asking me to decide the fate of what's going on in their life. And I'm sitting there like, man, come on, man. Like, this is the first day I just met you, man, 2 minutes ago. And you want me to make a decision on the operation like that?
Well, that's a fact, man. To the point where we have segments on Mondays, we do Mansers. And Mansers is women call up, or they email Roxy, and they have issues that they're going through in their relationship, females. And Drankins and our responsibility is to give them the man answer, the Manser. And that is honestly a bit that we take very seriously. Like, we are very serious with our answers from our perspective. And we, like, for the past month, literally, every Monday, the calls or the topics have been so strong that they last the entire week. People call on Fridays wanting to talk about Mansers for Monday because they couldn't get in on Monday. And, like, again, it's just a testament of them trusting us. They trust us. We've gained that trust over the 6 years that we've been, you know, rocking. And it's a blessing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, let me ask y'all a question, given the fact that we talked a little bit about being in a pandemic. Have you noticed any changes in people calling in or asking advice around issues of isolation and mental health? And we talk a lot about this on campus. And have you noticed a shift at all during this pandemic about the nature of your calls? Are people worried about what's happening? Are you getting that at all about what's happening in the world?
Our calls. Our calls are pretty much the same. They haven't switched to more concerns, and not any concerns of, you know, mental health or, you know, cabin fever or anything like that. You know, like nothing like that. They pretty much remain the same.
Mm. Well, but that's great to hear. And so what that tells me is that you guys are giving them a real outlet, and that's important. You know, it's important to do. That's so I'll appreciate that. One of the things that you guys have done, Roxy, you were a student at Winston-Salem State University. BDOT, you were a student at Winston-Salem State University. Frank, you were a student at North Carolina A&T. Talk about your experience as an HBCU student.
I enjoyed it. Like, simply put, my 6 years were some of the most epic years. Epic, E-P-I-C. I really credit the career and the life that I have now because of the foundation that I laid at Winston-Salem State University. It taught me a lot. Time management, just honestly, enter to learn, depart to serve, like being out here serving in the community. I take those things very seriously. And the friendships that I've made or that I made at Winston-Salem State, like I'm friends with a lot of those people still to this day. That HBCU culture was just a family culture from administration. Rest his soul, Lorenzo Meacham was like a godfather to me when I got to Winston-Salem State University. Professor Little, that's a man who taught me a lot of things. He was the first person who I went to go vote with when I was a freshman. And, you know, the things that I learned at the HBCU and the memories I made, I don't think I could have done that anywhere else. Not another HBCU, not another college, period. And I'm just indebted to Winston-Salem State University, man, seriously. Mm-hmm.
Roxy, talk about your experience.
So mine was, like, my college experience is a bit different because it was broken up. Like, I didn't spend all of my time, like, at one university. So I started at Hampton University. I did my freshman and half of my sophomore year there. And then I took a little break, partied my way home. had to take some time and regroup, join the military. So when I came to Winston-Salem State, I was a transfer student, a non-traditional student, and a bit more serious. Like, I was just trying to, at that point, like, get my degree. So, it was a bit different than, like, my experience at Hampton, but still, like, family, you know what I'm saying? Like, I made relationships there, like Dot said, that I still have to this day. I'm on jams. I'm in this position because of relationships I made at Winston-Salem State. Like you can't describe, like, the amount of family and love and support that you get on HBCU campuses. Like, it follows you everywhere.
Bank, what about you, man?
It's rough to explain. I mean, I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for A&T. I always, like, I have a tattoo on my arm. It says, you know, I'm from Charlotte. So it says 704 raised me, but the 336 made me. And that's just a testament to North Carolina A&T. It really did, like, help me blossom, you know, into who I am today, because I didn't, like, I've been a silly guy all my life, you know what I mean? But it wasn't until I got to A&T that I actually, you know, blossomed into a host and, you know, a comedian, you know? So, and I'm just grateful just for the HBCU experience, you know, I'm glad I'm not like my friends. Some of my friends I know that went to PWIs, just some of their views, you know, on some things and whatnot. You know, my views are different because I went to a HBCU and wouldn't have had it any other way.
Yeah. And so one of the things that the three of you, when I follow you and I listen to you, and you carry that with you. I mean, you think about the tradition of the universities that you guys have just mentioned, Hampton, Winston-Salem State University, you know, North Carolina A&T, very strong HBCUs, with notions of service and with notions of social justice. And you guys also carry that with you in terms of the work that you do, not only on your show, but the work that you do in the community. And that's important to see. Talk a little bit about that and how you carry that with the work that you do. And I'm wondering if you think about that in the way in which you carry yourself, the way in which you talk about yourself, that you're representing HBCUs. And if you do, how does that impact what you do?
I think we all know that we represent HBCU brands and we are a representation of those institutions, Winston-Salem State University, North Carolina A&T State University, and Hampton. And it's something we take great pride in. We know that when people, we like to be, you know, to be successful and be able to brag that we were taught at HBCUs. As far as out in the community and like just with that social activism part of it, I was late on that train. The person on this show who has always been the forefront of that movement has been Drankins. If there's anybody from this show who I ever see future like in political power or in a political seat, I really believe it'll be Drankins. He's very knowledgeable of that. And I really, over the years, and I don't even think I've ever told him this, but over the years, I've really taken a lot of notes from him and regurgitated a lot of things that he said to us in just regular conversations when I'm out in front of the masses. He's the reason that I wanted to get tighter on knowing exactly what district I live in and caring more about local elections. That's something that he's been on as long as I've known him. And, you know, from that perspective, it's one of those each one teach one type situations where, you know, you're just talking, but you don't even know who's listening and people are picking up gems and moving them forward. So I'm just thankful to be around the people that I'm around and thankful that I'm able to get that type of conversation from people that are peers of mine so that I can go out and continue to do what we do as Rams, enter to learn and depart to serve.
Yeah, great. Drankins, talk a little bit about that, man. He just gave you major props in terms of your perspective and how you've influenced him. Talk a little bit about that.
That's like, it's awesome to hear that because that's one thing I always say, each one reach one. Like, you know, it's like this, like a lot of times we think like, you know, our message and, you know, and whatnot, that they're like, they're not being heard and people are not getting it. But, you know, I mean, there's always one or two people that is getting it, that are getting it, you know, and then guess what? That one or two persons, they're going to go and they're going to tell somebody else. You understand what I'm saying? So it's all about, it's like I say, it's each one reach one, you know, and as far as the local elections and things, as far as that goes, like that's always been something that was near to me because I'll probably never, ever see the president. Even though the presidential election is important and whatnot, but I'll never see the president in my neighborhood, you know. But I do. I can go talk to my mayor, you know. I can go talk to my city officials, and guess what? And all those people, like, you know, that they affect how I live day to day, you know, every day. So, you know, like I tell them every morning, like, you know, like, and people, I try to tell people, you know, like, don't get caught up in the propaganda, you know, presidential elections and whatnot and all that, because, you know, I mean, your local elections are, you know, just as important. You know, you want to have a voice in the laws that affect how you navigate day to day. You know, if you don't vote locally, you know, you don't have that voice. So, you know, it was awesome to hear that. It was awesome to hear him say that because that's my only goal, Chancellor, just, you know, reach one individual, that one individual go reach an individual, that individual go reach another individual, and hey, next thing you know, we got a community. You know, exactly. I think Black folks have lost that ideal of, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, because, you know, and nowadays I think it takes a village to raise a community. You know what I mean? But, you know, that, I mean, because, you know, now it's, you know, it's not like kids these days, they're not dealing with what I had to deal with, you know, and I know that, you know, I saw the internet take off, you know, I saw, you know, just, you know, social influence and things just affect the day to day of kids and teenagers and things and all that. So, you know, it's just, it's important.
Yeah. And you guys have a powerful voice. Do you ever sit back and think about your voice and how important your voice is and who is listening to you? And I'm wondering if you feel or ever feel a sense of responsibility with that voice and what you say. I mean, Dran, because you were talking about, you know, how would somebody call you and a perfect stranger and then ask for advice? That's because your voice has been elevated to a very high level. And when you guys sit around and kick it and think about social responsibility, you ever think about that? And how do you guys address that at all?
I think about my upbringing. That's what I think about, my upbringing. And I feel like I have a duty. You know, I'm from the west side of Charlotte. I feel like I have a duty to represent every black kid, you know, who grew up in the recreation centers, you know, who grew up not having equal playing fields and equal educational resources, you know. And, you know, a lot of these things we don't see till we get grown. But, you know, you think back to your child and you be like, whoa, you know, like, for instance, like, I know I played baseball all my life. You know, I didn't know anything about a World Series. You know, it wasn't until I got grown. I was like, so you mean kids can go play for that? You understand what I'm saying? But I was on the west side of Charlotte, and I never knew anything about that. You know what I mean? But I played with little black boys all my life. You know, so being in the position that I'm in right now, you know, I just feel like I think about my upbringing a lot. And just like I have a responsibility to represent all the people where I come from.
Beautiful. Well said. I appreciate that. You guys, social consciousness, making folks aware. We just came through just a major, major election. And you guys were at the forefront of that. You went on college campuses. You talked about voting. And you just told me about your demographic, 18 to 24. And that's the age that we wanted to reach. And we did reach them because of voices like you all across this country. Just talk to me a little bit about that experience. What was it like being in that space, trying to encourage people to vote, and talk about that and get them to think differently? I mean, we had a lot of work to do. I mean, and we did a lot of work, but we have a long ways to go. I don't know if you guys see people start saying, I'm voting for the first time, you know, that was powerful. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. You know, B-Dot, I saw you came on campus a couple times, you know, spreading the word. We'll talk a little bit about athletics. You know, I had Chris Paul on the show a couple weeks ago. He came on campus leading people to the polls to vote. Talk to me about that, guys.
I think it's interesting. Like, you know, we're always, when you ask us, do we know how big our voice is? I will honestly say no. I know that we have a large following. I know that people listen, but it's still mind-boggling to me when situations happen, like Drankin just said, when people call up and are genuinely making life decisions and ask us for our opinion on it. You know, it's, to me, like what Drank just said, like I'm from the east side of Greensboro, Cumberland Courts. Like I was paying rent at my apartment when I was graduating high school, like poor, you understand? Like, so from that perspective, for people to view me as someone they should take direction from, I know that is a lot of responsibility, and to whom much is given, much is required. So I take that very, very seriously, but it is still surprising sometimes knowing the power that our voices have on a personal level. But even in that same vein, I felt the same responsibility to be out there because I know that I do have that voice to be out there on campus, as many campuses as I can be on, telling people to vote, as many videos as I can make telling people the importance of voting. And I was so happy when I saw that the largest growth was from that 18 to 24 demo. Like, that was very, very surprising to me. And I was very, very happy about that because that means that the college folks came out and they voted. And I remember going to colleges and telling them, like, when you graduate from college, you no longer think about college. So while you're in college and you have the chance to vote, you need to vote so that your voice is heard. Because once you leave and graduate college, you're not thinking about the plight of college kids because you have to pay back these loans now. And now you're an adult in the real world. So the only people that control the college boys are college people. And I tried to get that message out as much as possible. And other people, other influencers were doing the same. And it was just a blessing, man. I was really happy when I saw those numbers come in. I will say that.
And Chancellor, one thing I like about this election is that, you know, like you were mentioning, you know, a lot of first time voters, like people who just don't believe in the system. They don't believe in the system of voting. They don't think their vote counts. Like, they voted this election. And I'm so glad that, you know, the election turned out in their favor, because now they see if you show up and show out to the polls, you can make a difference and we can make a change. So that's one thing I'm glad that came out of this election, that a lot of first time voters and people who just didn't believe in the whole voting system, like they see now, like if we turn up, if we show up and show out, we are the majority.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I agree with you. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. I mean, I had Dr. Greg Carr on my show last week. Greg Carr, Howard University professor, just a brilliant, you know, social scientist, lawyer, you know, talking about the whole wave that we saw in terms of recruiting and getting more folks in this space. Some of the great work around this country, you know, Stacey Abrams down in Georgia and Atlanta, registering, you know, 800,000 people to vote, which is absolutely incredible. But the work that you guys did in terms of telling that story, what was it like for you? Tell me about the energy around that and leading up to the election. What was that like for you, Roxy? Because I know that, you know, you talk about mentoring young girls and also empowering them and sending out a message. What was it like during that whole run up to the election?
It was good energy. I'll say I remember, like, some mornings, months back when we would have conversations about how we felt like the energy for Donald Trump was much greater than that for the energy of Joe Biden. And we were talking about, you know, how, you know, why don't we see Joe Biden signs? Why don't we see Joe Biden flags? And why don't we feel like there's that same energy for the Democratic side as there is for Donald Trump and the Republican side? And so it was really good to see, as we got closer to the election, people become more engaged, people become more outspoken, and people put their voices out there and, you know, posting and encouraging their friends and their followers, their family, to go out, do their part. And, you know, the energy was good. Like, as we got closer to the election, it was really good to see.
Great, great. Fantastic in terms of that. So a lot of things have been happening while we have been locked away. And so one of the things that's been happening across this country is significant, racial unrest. I mean, we've seen, you know, killing George Floyd and others. And really it has got folks into spaces that they've never been in before, thinking differently, particularly about African-Americans and Black people in this country. And I actually told someone just the other day, it's almost as if people in some sense have rediscovered that there are inequities in America. Like, something that's been going on for a long time, all of a sudden, people are now, oh, there are inequities, there are health inequities, there are economic inequities. I mean, and so, but these are the kinds of things that have been going on for a long time, and people have been really frustrated. I'm wondering, in terms of your audience, what you've seen during the summer, even up to now, about conversation around race and race relations in America.
George Floyd's death put us back in the studio. Before George Floyd was murdered, we were working remotely from home. I was working from home, Roxy Drankins, and we were pre-recording the show. The biggest strength to our show is being able to interact with our audience. Like, that's a third of the show. And when we were working from home, we weren't allowed to do that. We had no phone capabilities. When George Floyd was murdered, my boss and I had a conversation, and I returned to the studio, and Roxy and Drankins were remote. But I did that so that we could take phone calls and sort of get a I don't know, get a gauge of the audience, how they were feeling. And, you know, people were upset justifiably, and we were allowing people to vent. Very transparently, I will share with you that during that time, our ratings suffered.
It suffered? It went down?
Yeah, they went down tremendously. Like, from second place to ninth place. And that super concerned us, especially in retrospect, because it almost felt like, and the three of us, honestly, I might be oversharing, Chancellor, because the three of us really haven't even had a chance to really talk about this, but it really felt like our audience didn't want to talk about that. And we really had difficulty trying to gauge exactly how much medicine to put with the candy. And, you know, we felt, again, it was one of those situations where we felt it our responsibility at that time to handle it in the fashion that we handled it. And I think if we had the opportunity to go back, I think we would do it the exact same way. But there was a drop off in ratings, and I really don't know exactly what to attribute that to, but I do know that simultaneously with us talking about the racial tensions in America, our numbers start to dwindle. And we were on it every day though. Like, we were every day talking about how upset we were as Black people, how white people needed to do better, especially if they considered themselves our allies. And we were angry. Like, we were angry. And that was like, I think that's really more of what it was, more than anything else. I think our energy, because again, when you listen to our show, it's good energy. Like, we always said that our most important thing is to be entertaining to our audience. We want you to cut on the radio, and whatever you're going through in the world, we want you to throw that out the car for your 15-minute commute to work while you're listening to us. We are your escape from that. But at that time, it would have been irresponsible to have an escape from that. The bits that we normally did, the Mansers, the Thoughtspirations, the Garden, all those things felt minuscule in comparison to the weight of the negative energy that was going on in the world. And we all felt, as Black people, as 3Live, I think I can speak for Roxy and Drake when I say this, we all felt like victims. And from that perspective, we were angry. And I think that energy was feeding out into the airwaves a lot more than our normal routine. And I think that was the reason for the loss in numbers.
Yeah.
Others, two of you want to comment on that? Anyone else?
As far as the, you know, the fight for injustice right now, I do have to acknowledge Generation Z, you know, the young generation. They're not the generation you're going to let your dog loose, you're going to let your dogs loose on, and you're not going to turn your water hose on. Because if you do that, you're going to really have an even bigger problem, you know. And I admire that in them. I admire that in Generation Z. You know, just from being out in the streets protesting and whatnot, I see way more younger faces than I see faces with gray like mine, you know, and that makes me feel good, you know, to see so many young people involved in the struggle, so many young people involved in what's going on in their neighborhoods, so many young people involved in, you know, voting, you know, that like, That gives me great hope. Great hope.
Great. Couple other areas we want to get into before the end of the show. What's the evolution of you guys? I mean, what's next for you? Where are you going with your show? What would you like to do different?
I feel as if, you know, I feel as if our show should be, you know, it should also be visual. You know, I believe the people, you know, if they're entertained by our just hearing our voices, if they actually saw, you know, the actual conversation happening as they're happening, and just how we interact together in a studio. Like, it's a TV series, you know, it's a TV series. It's, you know, it's, It's entertaining. It's just so entertaining. So I feel like, you know, that's in the future somewhere. That's in the future somewhere.
So I like that. I like that. It's the next step, you know, visual, getting out there. I like that a lot in terms of that. Let me ask you about music, a little bit about music in the last segment here. When, you know, when I was, you know, I hate to say this, cause, you know, Drac is going to get all over me because he's going to see how old school I am, but you know, the OJs. Let me throw this out. The OJs have a song said, you know, we have a message in our music. And what's the message in today's music? And who are the artists, in your opinion, that are carrying powerful messages today?
I've told them before, like Chancellor, like now, you know, like back in the 90s, you know, there was a balance in hip hop. Like you had your native tongues, you know, your Queen Latifah's, your Jungle Brothers, your you know, your Moni Loves, your De La Souls, your Tribe Called Quest, your Commons, you know, and then you had your NWAs, you know, your No Limits, your Hot Boys, your but nowadays it's like we're more Hot Boy, and we only have, you know, it's not, hip hop is not as balanced as it used to be. So, you know, the message in hip hop now is heavy street life. Heavy
drugs, heavy guns, heavy fornication. That's honestly a lot of the message. I mean, you got to really dig in the crates to find the Rhapsodies, the J. Cole's, the Kendricks, the Wale's. You got to dig in the crates to find those. Like that, like, I agree 100%. Drank has wrapped it up best. That the balance is a lot more weighted in the ratchet.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's driving that? The economics? That's what's selling. That's what people are buying. What's driving that? Almost kind of the lack of having this kind of uplifted kind of consciousness that sometimes we had been accustomed to.
What's popular?
That's what's driving it.
And I also believe that, you know, the powers that be see the influence of hip hop, and so. Whatever people want to get pushed, put it in hip hop.
Gotcha.
Which goes back to my earlier statement. Ever since its conception, hip hop has controlled America. Hip hop controls what direction America goes in. Like all the memes with now Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and just all the, like, it's just, everything is hip hop. Everything, you know, like, even Joe Biden running to the stage to give his acceptance speech. They put so many hip hop tracks behind that in different memes and stuff. Like, hip hop controls the culture. And I agree with Drankins. Whoever pumps, whoever's controlling that. I mean, you follow the money. Where does the money go back to? Whatever, like, white man controlling that part, that's who pumping it. Mm-hmm.
Like, even this election, Chancellor, you had Biden signs, you had Trump signs. But every now and then, you would see a sign that said, presidents are temporary, but Wu-Tang is forever. Hip-hop is everywhere. Okay? Everywhere.
Legit.
Look, I got a couple of interesting things, and we'll get you out of here. I know you guys talk a lot about sports. So tell me about your favorite teams. I read Roxy likes the Duke Blue Devils. I know that's not true, but I read that somewhere that she liked the. That can't be true.
That is true. That's true.
Listen, I told you. Listen, Roxy couldn't be perfect. I mean, she's got her flaws, you know, and that is clearly
it's not one of them.
One of them.
Not one of them.
I'm straight Dallas Cowboys. Tar Heels, Winston-Salem State University, St. Louis Cardinals baseball, and Charlotte Hornets basketball, and wherever CP3 goes. So now I'm rooting for the Phoenix Suns.
There you go. I love it. There you go. Drankins, what about you, man?
I'm Carolina Panthers, Charlotte Hornets, and North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride, baby.
There you go, Aggie Pride. Roxy, Duke Blue Devils, and who else?
LeBron James.
All right. So is LeBron James the GOAT?
Period.
Oh my goodness.
Period.
That's what Roxy
will
tell you.
Yes. That's what I say.
I say it's 1A, 1B. MJ, LBJ.
Yeah.
I don't even like MJ.
I think it's time to wrap this up, Chancellor. I think it is. My baby gets tired over there. Chris, give Roxy something to eat.
She's tired. It is my time to wrap this up. The way you get out of here is you got to tell me, I got a couple categories with the American Music Awards. You got to tell me who's going to win. Right?
We'll do our best, even though we ain't going to watch.
You said American Music Awards. The Soul Train Awards is coming up. Why you choose the?
Because the American Music Awards is coming up on Sunday.
Okay. You gonna watch Chancellor? Chancellor, you watch the AMAs?
No.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm gonna watch this game.
That's the one side. You saw Chancellor
tell
that.
Like, what? I watch American Music Awards. Here we go.
Cap.
Look, we'll play along though.
Yeah, you're just playing along. Okay. All right. Artist of the year. See, you tell me who's gonna win and then who should win. All right. Artist of the year, we have Justin Bieber, Post Malone, Roddy Ricch, Taylor Swift, The Weeknd.
Post Malone
gonna win.
Or Taylor Swift.
Go Taylor Swift.
Taylor did have an album drop this year.
Taylor, yeah, the biggest album of the year this year.
It was bigger than Post Malone's.
Okay, yeah. So who's gonna win? Taylor Swift is gonna win, but Post Malone should win.
Taylor's gonna win.
All right,
I'm gonna go with Roxy.
Roddy Ricch would get my vote.
Really, Roxy? The Weeknd wouldn't get your vote? You're so excited he performing at halftime.
The Weeknd shouldn't be in there.
The Weeknd should be in there. I wasn't a huge fan of this album, but I still like him.
All right, we got you. New Artist of the Year. All right. Louis Capaldi. Doja Cat. Who? I don't know. Don't ask me. Look, I'm not in this. This is for you guys. All right.
Okay.
All right. Doja Cat, Da Baby, Lil Baby, Roddy Ricch, Megan Thee Stallion.
Look, Louis Capaco gonna win it. Watch. Oh, look. Watch.
What is that?
I think Lil Baby's gonna win.
Yeah.
Lil Baby, but not Da Baby.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
I hate to say that because Da Baby is Charlotte, but yeah.
But yeah. Lil Baby just I don't know. And that's weird. Why are we saying that? Because Da Baby had a run. But right. Lil Baby had a run too though.
Yes.
I think my turn was like right behind Taylor Swift's album. I think.
Wow.
I'm going with Da Baby.
Well, Chancellor, you can't even pronounce everybody's name in the category, so you might want to touch stuff. Got your little Darkwing Duck hat on. Think you're going to tell somebody something.
Look, I don't count because I can't, right? All right.
It's your show, Chancellor. Right. I'll
try to do better. Only a couple more and we out of here. Collaboration of the year. Mm. We're going Cardi B featuring Megan Thee Stallion with WAP, W-A-P.
Right? Chancellor.
Wait.
It's just, you don't have to pronounce, you don't have to
Let it roll.
We're back to Da Baby featuring Roddy Ricch with Rockstar, right?
Okay.
And we got Dan plus Shay with Justin Bieber, 10,000 Hours, Lady Gaga and Ariana, Rain on Me, and then Megan Thee Stallion featuring Beyonce, Savage Mix.
This is a good category.
Category, Ron.
Yes, that is a good category. Who we going with?
I think Ariana Grande, though. Ariana Grande and you said Taylor Swift and Ariana Grande?
And Lady Gaga.
Oh, Lady Gaga.
I think Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande will win. Roddy Ricch and DaBaby should win.
I think Roddy and DaBaby will win.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. That's where I'm going.
Do you think they should win?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look, enough of that. But I appreciate you guys playing along with me. I appreciate you coming on the show. This has been a delight for me. A little change of pace. I love it being here. I will continue to listen to your show. I will continue to support you. Continue doing great work. Continue telling the HBCU story. Continue the work of social justice. We need so many out there. Your voice is loud. Your voice is important. And use it wisely is my advice.
Can I say something to you, Chancellor?
Yes.
I just want to say I appreciate what you're doing over at Winston-Salem State University. When we had a change in the guard, a chancellor, we didn't know what to expect. But you have been refreshing. You have been a visionary. I just think you're doing a great job. And I just want to let you know that I will follow you wherever you go, bro. Whatever you need from me, please let me know. I know that you listen to the show because you'll send me a DM talking about something that we were talking about on the show. And it always tickles me that you were even listening. But sincerely, man, you really make our institution look good. And us Rams are really, really thankful that we got you in that spot, bro.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys. Guys, take care. Be well. Listen to the show. Tell people about Future Focus Now. We are certainly, as I mentioned to you on the radio this morning, we are growing webcasts. I think we do good work. We got a great brand. We've been syndicated. We've been picked up by, HBC Smart TV. We also on Sirius XM 142. The show will air on 90.5, and then it'll be syndicated the rest of the week. So you get a chance.
And don't tell my boss, but I listen to that HBCU station on Sirius in my car. That's crazy. I didn't even know you were on there.
There you go. We are on there. Thank you so much.
That's
good. All right.
That's what's up.
Good night, everybody. Join us next week for another edition of Future Focus Now.